This is Strange Harbor.
4,500 years, 2,500 BC. It's called it's VA 243. It's in a museum in Berlin. It's well dated. Called the Glancing of the Cloud. But this is what makes this special right here. Solar system, right? Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, in their relative sizes, mind you. Earth, Moon, Mars, and then what should be here? This should be the asteroid belt. This is Nibiru, folks. Nibiru. Jupiter, Saturn, Pluto as a moon of Saturn, Uranus, Neptune. Notice that it's only a little bit bigger than Uranus, Neptune. It's about three times bigger than Earth. Did it occur to any of you that we were looking at a cylinder seal carved 4,500 years ago that had Uranus in it that we only discovered in 1781 when our telescopes got good enough to see it? It had Neptune when we discovered in 1846 when our telescopes got good enough to see it, and Pluto, which we discovered in 1930 when our mathematicians got good enough to tell our astronomers where to look for the thing, because it was so small. What are the Sumerians doing knowing about that? Furthermore, what are they doing writing in one of their tablets that if you look at these two, Uranus and Neptune, in the heavens, meaning right out on them, they look like blue-green watery twins? When we didn't find that out, we thought they were just big old gas bags like Jupiter and Saturn until Voyager went out there in 86 and 89 and found that, lo and behold, they really are blue-green watery twins. What the Sumerians said 4,500 years ago. Furthermore, they didn't count the way we do. Earth was not the third rock from the sun for them. It was number seven. So that means they were counting from out here and they were putting Pluto in its correct place. What are they doing with all that knowledge? Well, they make no bones about it. They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru. The people living on Nibiru came to Earth and gave us everything that we have, everything that you know, our great culture. What's the proof of that? Is there any proof that any ancient advanced civilization was ever on Earth at any point in the dim or distant past? Yes, yes, the megalithic structures out there, the pyramids, Tiwanaku, Baalbek, Teotihuacan, Stonehenge, you name it, a couple of dozen of them. All of those are impossible for human beings to recreate today. And yet we are told in another one of these great fantasies that they were somehow created by people in ancient times, ancient Egyptians or ancient Sumerians or anybody. And it's just absolute malarkey, impossible.
Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange. This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unforgettable, and the unforgivable.
So, our friend Andrew is in the studio today. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty good.
We talk about weird stuff here, like UFOs, alien abduction, Sasquatch sightings, conspiracies, near death. Ghosts. You have any experience in any of those? Any sightings or anything?
It was around Halloween, I guess, and I thought I saw some sort of flying thing. It was just hovering there, right? There's a tree here. It was definitely not a part of the tree. It was just hovering there. I got a friend to look at it. I look away to get, you know, another person to look at it, and it's just gone after that.
And what did it look like?
Well, it was, it's weird. It just was black. Just a giant black mass.
A blob?
Well, it wasn't more. It had a little bit. It's weird. I couldn't describe it very vividly, but it had like kind of jagged points to it.
Hmm. How big was it?
From where I was.
Yeah.
About the size of a pen, I guess.
Width wise.
Yeah.
So like maybe a softball size.
A bit bigger than that. Like, cause it was more like oval shape, but also very like it had height to it as well.
If it was right in front of you, not far away, how big do you think it would have been compared to you?
I honestly wouldn't be able to calculate that. It did happen a while ago, so it's just distant, but I can still kind of remember the key parts of it, at least.
Right on. Okay.
So, yeah.
So you saw something weird.
Yeah.
That's strange. That falls in the strange category, don't you think, Bill?
I think it does. That's very strange.
How about you? Have you seen anything weird lately in the last week?
No, but, I was on Coffee Talk this week. A guy called in and said that he saw in Ocean Shores a light that at first he thought it might be a meteor or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it came straight down very quickly and then made a 90-degree jog and went out to sea. Now, I didn't see this, but he saw it, and he called in during the other show, so I didn't really get to talk to him in depth about it. It might be worth it for us to kind of look with some of our sources, see if anybody else saw anything that night.
When did he say this happened?
Last Monday.
See, because a couple of years ago, and I remember, I think I told you about it too, I saw that same thing happen, and it was over the ocean. I was on my way to work. It was around 3 o'clock in the morning. This light goes straight down. Now, it could have took off at a 90 degree, but where I was, there were, you know, trees and some hills, but that light going straight down, I've seen that before, and I'm wondering, just theorizing here, if that same thing happens often.
There's been more and more action in the Ocean Shores area, probably over the last 4 or 5 months.
Huh.
And people have told me that they've seen things. There's obviously creatures of the night, but that's kind of always been out there.
I hope people will start to reach out and let us know when they see weird things, either via Facebook or StrangeHarbor.net or calling you at your number 360. But just reaching out somehow and letting us know, because wouldn't it be nice to compile, you know, if other people saw what he had seen, if it was the same thing that I had seen.
If you let us know directly, maybe we can follow up on it. And,
right.
And, you know, maybe you'll discover a new creature. And we'll name it after you.
Right. Do you think we have any octopus out in the water, the ocean there at Ocean Shores in Westport?
Good question. I think there are.
Yeah?
Not that I've ever seen. I think they're more warm water creatures. I don't know if we have a lot of them out here.
Yeah.
I've never seen any on the beach or anything.
But, Wilson Musashi says he spent 7,800 hours of his life hanging out with octopi. Is it octopi or octopuses?
Octopi.
They call him the octopus whisperer.
Uh-huh. Everybody's got to have a title.
Right. They communicate with him, apparently.
Interesting.
Yes.
What kind of things do they say? Have they asked him out on a date?
Well, according to Musashi, she's just contacting me, and she's saying, you come to me.
That's what they always say.
Speaking of Freya, a 3-year-old predator weighing 35 to 40 pounds, her arms span 14 feet, and pack enough strength to kill sharks and other enemies. She'll wrap her tentacles and stuff around, like, his arms. He says, I've been able to interact with them from the beginning. I do not know why. I cannot explain it. But I can connect with them. He said this standing in front of the Olympic Coast Sanctuary exhibit that is Freya's home, the octopus. He said, I've made them a few toys, made up some boxes, and I put different latches so they can get in and figure out how to get the food that I put in the boxes.
That's interesting.
However, I've had some that said, it's too much time to figure out how do you do the latch. So they just crush the box. He says, every octopus is different, so then you can't use the same rules for every octopus. You need to change it up, and he does just that. But anyway, it's given him something to do.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like these octopuses or octopi are very smart because they're problem solvers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you can't open the latch, you crush the box. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's problem solving.
Yeah.
And that's a higher function of mental capability, yeah.
Right. 25 real-life places in America that many believe are cursed. You believe in curses?
How cursed are they?
They're so cursed. No.
What do you got?
First up, the Queen Anne Hotel in San Francisco.
Oh, in San Francisco, yeah.
Before it was a hotel, it had served as an etiquette school for girls from 1890 to 1896. Those who stay in room 410 can perhaps catch a glimpse of the school's late headmistress, Miss Mary Lake. When guests wake up in the morning, they often find that Lake has unpacked their clothes and made their bed.
Wow.
Let's see, Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, New York. one of the more infamous spirits to haunt the town, is the Bronze Lady. Now, according to the local legend, this statuesque woman sits in the local cemetery and can either haunt you forever or comfort you, depending on how you treat her.
Oh, very interesting.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
The Winchester Mystery House, San Jose, California.
That's an awesome place.
Have you been there?
I've been there several times.
Do you know about the cursing haunting stuff?
Yeah, oh yeah. They even made a movie about it that came out, was it last year or the year before? It was a pretty good movie. It wasn't spectacular.
Do you remember the details of the place when you went there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And they shot this movie at this house, some of the scenes.
Yeah.
Or at least they recreated the area of the house where it was being shot. But it's an amazing place. I mean, it's huge, and it just goes on and on and on. And there's ramps and stairways, and there's doors that go to nowhere, and stairways that go to nowhere, and it's just an incredible place. And when you're there, when you're inside that house, you can feel the spirit energy.
Really?
It's very powerful, yes. I didn't particularly see any ghosts, but I'm not... I don't see those emanations very often. I'm more of a you would call it a sense of presence, a feeling that something is there. Maybe I'm more of an empath, I guess. But you can feel it. I mean, you can just feel the spirit presence. You can feel the cool drafts coming through. And it's just an amazing place. If you get a chance to go there, go. It's worth, I don't know what they charge to get in. It was a couple of bucks when I went, but that was a long time ago. I imagine it's a little more now, but whatever it is, it's worth it. It's worth the tour.
Do you remember who haunts the place?
The house was owned by the widow of the man who created the Winchester rifles.
Oh.
So this is the Winchester Firearm Company. And it's said that the house is haunted by all the people that were killed by those rifles.
Ooh.
So, I mean, there's just tons of ghosts.
Right.
And if you watch the movie, of course, it's all dramatized, and I think they pretty much destroy the house.
Oh, yeah.
In the end, you know. But now, it doesn't happen quite that way. I mean, these spirits that haunt the place, they might be a little frightening, but I don't think they're so malevolent that they would knock a bookcase over on you or, you know, club you with a baluster or something. But it's really, if you like haunted houses and you like haunted places, Winchester Mystery House is one of the must-see places.
How about the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum?
Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
Opened in 1864, hundreds of patients have died in conditions that were deemed inhumane upon its closing in the 1990s. At one time during the 50s, 2,400 patients were crammed into a facility meant for just 250 people. It was known for performing lobotomies and electric shock therapy on its patients. Apparently, some of the former patients appear as shadowy figures, forever cursing the premises. This place looks cool. This place looks like an Alcatraz. I mean, it's not on an island, but I've always wanted to buy Alcatraz. I'd buy this place just because it's so cool.
Is it a big concrete
mansion-like-looking
place?
Totally. Yeah. It's on the website.
It's interesting because a lot of those old mental institutions, or asylums as they were called, were on the East Coast. And they did a lot of, I mean, really horrible things to mentally ill people. And lobotomies and electroshock therapy were probably some of the milder things they did.
Right.
There are actually films. When I was in grad school and we were studying the history of mental health, we actually saw live films that were made at some of these hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did to these people was just... atrocious. I mean, it was it just made you sick. But we actually, you know, I don't know if they do today, but up until 20 years ago or so, they still did lobotomies and electroshock therapy. I think they still do electroshocks. I don't know if they do lobotomies much anymore. But lobotomies in the more modern times were used for patients that were very violent or prone to violent fits. So by lobotomizing them, it would cut out that part of the brain that caused those violent episodes and those fits, and they would live a more functional life, although it did have other effects that were undesirable. And electroshock therapy, it's often done with people who are chronically depressed. I mean, seriously, seriously depressed.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some evaluation, and you have to make a presentation to a board before they do it, or at least last time I was involved in that. That's the way it was done. And one of the side effects of electroshock therapy is amnesia. So after they have the therapy, they don't remember a whole lot. But in most cases, the memory returns in probably 3 to 6 months, sometimes a little longer. And it's actually quite effective with depression. But like any other treatment, it's often short-lived and either needs to be repeated or
send them down to homeless camps.
Or send them to the homeless camp, right.
Pennsylvania, the Gettysburg Battlefield.
Well, I've heard about that one.
What do you know?
I've talked to people that have been out there. I have friends that are Civil War buffs, you know, and they go out there hoping to find, like, an old musket ball or something.
Oh, yeah?
And I've had several of these friends tell me that they've encountered ghosts out there. That they've either felt the presence of the soldiers that died on that field, or they've actually seen, like, images of soldiers.
Wow.
Walking around through the field. So, I know that that's one of the most haunted places in the country.
Well, according to this, deadliest battle of the Civil War, more than 50,000 men meeting their fate over the course of a 3-day conflict. Since most of them weren't given a proper burial, it's believed that their souls still haunt the military park there. Now, a few years ago, one park ranger even published a blog post about the fact that the park's rocks are cursed. Apparently, the park occasionally gets packages in the mail from tourists returning rocks they took from the site. A violation of federal regulations that can result in a hefty fine. One letter was from a young couple who took 3 small stones from the park, only to have their lives fall apart. They lost their home, saw their marriage crumble, and were plagued with health problems. Another visitor wrote that since taking a few rocks in 06, I've had nothing but horrible times, injured on the job, several successive relationship failures, etc. This is one cursed piece of land that you could probably don't want to mess with, so... Wow.
That's what I've heard. Everybody that I've talked to that's ever been there has said similar things, you know, that the place is cursed, that it's haunted, that the spirits of all these dead soldiers are still there. Well, you think about 50,000 people dying in one battle. In the Vietnam War, where we had quite a number of casualties, you know, the casualty rate was fairly high, not as high as our world wars, but for the type of skirmish that it was quite high. 56,000 died, Americans died over a period of about 13 years. So when you think about 50,000 men dying in one battle, And I don't know how many days that battle went on, but still, I mean, it's just astounding that many people died in one place.
During the colonial period, a section of land that spans more than 1 million acres in southern New Jersey was full of paper mills and sawmills. It was all but deserted in the mid-19th century once coal was discovered in nearby Pennsylvania. The most prominent legend here is that of the Jersey Devil, a character that plagues the entire state. You familiar with the Jersey Devil?
I am. I've heard about it and read a little bit about it.
According to local lore, the devil was born when Pine Barrens native Deborah Leeds found out she was expecting her 13th child. She cried out, "Let this one be the devil!" And when the child arrived, it was. The Jersey Devil has leathery wings, a goat's head, and hooves. Since its birth in 1735, residents and visitors have reported seeing that the creature in the trees and on the sides of the highway. He kills livestock and terrorizes motorists. At one point, as much as $100,000 was offered for his capture. Wow.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, a goat head and wings and all that. I mean, that'll make you stand out in a crowd.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, the Stanley Hotel in Colorado.
Oh, yes.
That was the inspiration for Stephen King's The Shining.
Right, right.
Consider it one of the most haunted places in the world. Now, rumor has it the original owners of the hotel, F.O. and Flora Stanley, haven't left a residence since they opened it in 1909. Now, according to guests who have stayed at the hotel, Mr. Stanley frequently shows up in photographs. Mrs. Stanley can sometimes be spotted playing the piano, and obviously, if you listen closely enough, you can often hear the sounds of children's laughter echoing through the hallways. You can book a room there at the hotel, but if you're scared, you can take a tour during the light of day.
I think I'd go during the daytime. Not that I'm afraid of ghosts by any means, but, you know, that place is scary.
Yeah?
You know, I mean, just looking at it, it's scary.
If you've seen American Horror Story, then you're likely familiar with the story of Madame Delphine LaLaurie, a New Orleans socialite accused of torturing and killing slaves at her home in the city's French Quarter. That's until 1834, when a fire broke out at the residence. Officials who responded to the scene discovered her mutilated slaves who'd been trapped in the attic during the blaze. When the townspeople caught wind of her crimes against humanity, they stormed the mansion in retaliation, forcing her to retreat to France. Almost immediately, neighbors claimed to hear the phantom screams of her victims coming from the attic, as well as the image of a young girl fleeing across the mansion's roof. Centuries later, visitors to the city can still tour the outside of the home at 1140 Royal Street, although many report fainting or becoming nauseous as they pass by.
Huh? Wow. Weird. That's interesting. I haven't heard of that one before.
Right. Well, we got to take a break.
All right, let's take a break.
So, it'll be up to you whether we do more haunted places or do something else. It'll be up to you, okay?
All right. I'll take responsibility for that.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we've been talking about real-life places here in the good old USA that many believe are cursed. Do we want to keep on this, or do you want to change it up, Bill?
Let's talk about the boy and the bear.
Oh, okay. You know more about this story than I do, but this happened recently, right?
Yeah, this happened recently. I mean,
but
this is...
The boy get eaten by a bear or something?
This is... No. No, I guess he... I don't know the story, whether he was kidnapped or whether he just ran away.
He just went missing.
He went missing. He was missing for 3 days, and then he came back. They found him, and he said that he was taken care of by a bear. For those of you that have a firm belief that Sasquatch exists, you know, maybe this kid actually had contact with a Bigfoot.
Maybe.
I mean, this is probably the most plausible evidence that we've had of human contact with Bigfoot.
Unless it was a bear.
Unless it was a bear.
It could have been a bear, right?
It could have been.
I understand. It's my understanding that bears take off when humans are around. They avoid us, much like Sasquatch avoid us. But there have been many, 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 many other reports where little kids go missing or they're lost in the woods, and the hairy bear held its hand and led them back to mommy.
Bears normally hibernate in the winter.
Yeah.
So this being the middle of winter, although you can never tell it by the weather we're having, I feel sorry for all you guys out there in the Midwest. But we're having lovely 50-something degree days out here in the Pacific Northwest. But here's a kid who ends up in the woods for 3 days. And how old is he? He's like
3 years old.
3 years old.
Right.
Now, 3 days in midwinter, even though we've had warmish weather, you know, in the nighttime it drops down in the 30s.
And this was in North Carolina.
And
so it's probably colder right now.
It's way colder.
Right.
So here's a kid, goes out in the woods for 3 days, 3 years old, comes back relatively unscathed.
Right.
I think he had like one little abrasion on the side of his face. He says he was taken care of by a bear. I mean, this is amazing. I think, to me, the minute I heard that he said that, I immediately said, there's your evidence of Bigfoot. This is something we need to follow. We need to talk to this kid, see if he can describe this bear.
Right, or even show him depictions, artist renditions, even the Patterson-Gimlin film. And
you know, it's hard to communicate with a three-year-old.
Right.
But this is a huge opportunity. This may be the first reported human contact with a Bigfoot. I mean, prolonged contact. You know, we have people that have gone out in the woods, have seen them, have seen evidence that they are out there. But 3 days.
Right.
3 days. And the kid comes back, you know, relatively unscathed. I mean, this to me is just one of the most amazing stories.
Since he said it was a bear, then that's probably how it's going to go.
That's how
it was a bear. He said it was a bear. It was a bear. It wasn't a Sasquatch. Now, there's also the Albert Ostman incident, but, you know, that happened in, you know, the early 1900s, I think, where he was kidnapped by...
by Bigfoot.
Yes, and Albert Ostman, anyone who knows him, no-nonsense guy, he actually didn't share the story for most of his life. He didn't mention this to anybody, but he was prospecting. He was a young prospector.
Yeah.
He was sleeping in a sleeping bag up in the mountains. Next thing you know, he's woken up. Something is carrying him like a big sack of potatoes, carried him for miles. The way he was being carried in a sleeping bag, I mean, he couldn't struggle away or anything. Took him into this kind of, I want to say, a ravine where there was only one way in and one way out because it was like steep cliff mountains.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just going on memory, and my memory isn't all that great, so those of you that go to imright.com, no, it was actually a quarry. Okay, whatever. Great, fine. Anyway, he couldn't get out, and...
send Johnny a message.
Right,
on the website.
Yeah. That's johnny@strangeharbor.net. He was kind of held captive for a few days. Again, early 1900s. The way he got free was he had snus. He would do his snus, and they were kind of curious about it. They wouldn't let him out, you know, and they were bigger than he was, so... he handed one of them his snus, and they went to, I think, eat it. And it made them tear up and made them sneeze or just made them do a bunch of... it distracted them long enough that he could take off running. Yeah. And he kept running. And I think it was the mother Sasquatch that started chasing him but finally gave up because he just kept running and running. Now, you could find the official report online. You can read it. I'm probably not accurate in some of the minor details, but pretty much he was kidnapped by a Sasquatch, taken back to the family of Sasquatches. And the vibe he got was he was there to mate with the young female that was part of the family. That was the vibe he got.
Yeah.
But anyway, he took off, and he kept that story with him for years. He finally talked about it. Of course, he was forced to take lie detector tests, which he passed.
Yes.
Anyway, you can find his story. It's a rather remarkable story on the internet. Anyway, that's another story where... But he was a young man, again, how many decades ago? And you just never know. With a three-year-old kid, though, hey, I hung out with a bear.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, if you're a three-year-old kid, it would look like a bear.
Right, it would.
Yeah. What's interesting is that, you know, as human beings, you know, we kind of care about infants. Mm-hmm. If you found, you know, a baby bear or a baby deer, you know, that looked like it was lost in the woods and couldn't find its mother, I mean, you might take care of it.
Right.
You might try to help it find its mother, or you might take it home, or you might feed it and keep it warm. So if Bigfoot is part human, and I mean, even if it's totally animal, those are kind of natural instincts to care for infants.
I don't think it's a total animal because they use language. That's my two cents.
Yeah, all right. That's a good 2 cents.
Yeah. Maybe it's 3 cents.
Might even be 3 cents.
Right? Yeah. So.
But, I think that it just makes sense that this is whatever took care of him for this time and got him back safely was a functional creature, more so than a bear.
Now, let's see, what would a bear do out in the woods? They kind of just hunker down, they roam around, forage for food and berries and things, and they might climb a tree. They're kind of slow unless they're chasing you, right?
Well, especially in winter. I mean, they become very sluggish.
Yeah.
They either are in hibernation or if they aren't, they're not very active.
Right.
I suppose a kid could have found a bear in hibernation and just curled up with it.
Maybe.
That might be an answer, but it sounds, from what the kid said, that this bear, whatever it was, actually kind of cared for him and made sure that he was safe and warm.
I wonder if we can contact the family and see if they'll talk with us.
We ought to try it.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
Make it happen, Bill.
Make it happen, Bill.
Oh.
I'll look them up. I'll see if I can find any kind of contact information for them. And because I'd really like to hear. I mean, to me, this is the most fascinating story. And I suppose it could be entirely bogus, but I don't think so. I just have a feeling about this one, that this is the real deal. And I think that we should pay attention to this.
Right. Right.
We got to pay more attention to the world around us. You know, there are things out there that we have no knowledge of, that we have no sense of what it is or why it is or how it exists here. And I think that it's important that we understand those things.
Like reptilians.
Like reptilians.
Reptilians.
Yeah.
Apparently the reptilians control the world.
That's what they say.
A shadowy organization known as the Global Elite or the Illuminati. You're not buying it?
I'm not buying it, no.
They create religious, ethnic, and sexual division to keep humanity in a state of constant fear and chaos. Due to this constant state of division, it's believed that the reptilians are able to rule the world in a totalitarian fashion. Now, this guy, David Icke,
I think it is.
Okay.
Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
He theorizes this concept of reptilian aliens controlling human civilization. His reptoid hypothesis states that long ago, reptilian aliens, known as the Archons, came from the constellation Draco. These aliens then mated with the humans at the time, and that their descendants now rule the earth. He claims that the mythological references of gods mating with humans actually refers to these reptilian aliens mating with human women to produce hybrid offspring. This hybrid race, known as the Babylonian Brotherhood, or the Illuminati, and he believes that they control the world. For he and others like him, the ancient stories and texts are littered with references to non-human beings interacting with humans, something he cites as proof that all of these non-human entities are reptilians. So, I have for you how to spot a reptilian. 5 signs that you may be with someone.
Or maybe you are one.
Right. Okay, 1. Look in their eyes. Look for reptilian eyes. The first place to look. Some people say that these shapeshifters have reptile-esque eyes if you look closely enough. Others say it's possible to spot their reptilian eyes only sometimes while they're in the midst of shapeshifting.
I see.
So next time you suspect that a world leader may be a reptilian, and according to this conspiracy theory, almost all of them are, take a close look at the eyes. Are they like vertical slits? Are they a deep black? Did they seem to change suddenly? If so, this may be a sign of a reptilian.
Well, we know all politicians have forked tongues.
Ooh. So. Next, you check their body for scales or odd textured skin. Another common way is the appearance of scales. While a reptilian is shape-shifting, you may see their skin change a little. Maybe you see a hint of green all of a sudden, or you notice that the texture becomes scaly or rough like that of a lizard or snake. Now keep in mind, this isn't something that you should see often, since supposedly reptilians go to great lengths to appear as if they have human skin. Now if you're curious, there's plenty of photos you can find online of famous people who appear to show signs of reptile skin. Are these just artifacts in the photo and nothing more? Are those scales near a celebrity's forehead just a sign of a poorly attached wig? Is that flaky dryness simply lack of moisturizer? You can never know for sure.
You can never know.
Okay, watch to see if the hologram flickers. Reptilians are supposed to be really good at hiding their true identity. Sometimes it may be so automatic to them that they don't even realize they're doing it. Occasionally, their disguise may become apparent, though especially in moments of distress. Well, that's how the stories go. Since their human skin can be holographic, it is subject to the limitations of the technology. You could search the internet to find dozens of videos that's supposed to be evidence of a politician or celebrity letting down their guard, unknowingly revealing their true reptilian form on live television.
Yeah.
4, they seem to have no soul. That fits a lot of politicians, right?
And a lot of celebrities.
One of the hallmarks of a reptilian is that they have very little or no conscious awareness. Again, they exist like robots, and there's little you can do to appeal to any kind of human consciousness in them. They've been bred to enslave humanity, and they do not want to deviate from their programming. They tend to have difficulty displaying genuine human emotions as well. Does this person who is a suspected reptilian seem to have no light in their eyes? Do they show no remorse? Do they seem completely empty and devoid of any human touch? Reptilians generally attempt to appear like humans and act as if they have human traits like empathy and self-awareness, but things might still appear not quite right.
Right.
You might sense something artificial about them. 5, your intuition is alerting you of a nearby reptilian. Finally, after all of this hard-hitting research, the most common way to spot a reptilian is simply one's intuition, according to more experienced lizard spotters. If you feel like the person is an alien presence, then they could very well likely be a reptilian. But your gut can't always be 100% right. But combined with some holographic technical difficulties...
What do you think about Keith Richards? You think he's a reptile?
Yeah, he kind of looks like it.
Lives a long time. You know, reptiles live a long time.
He's got that scaly skin.
Yeah, I think he and Willie Nelson might be brothers.
So here we have it. You combined with your intuition with some holographic technical difficulties, a flash of scaly skin, their eyes, all that adding up, you know... And, you know, they have no remorse.
Right.
They have no soul. But what do you do if you find a reptilian? If you're absolutely convinced your local politician or your best friend or you are a reptilian.
What do you do?
Nothing.
Pull your tail off?
Even according to the lore, you can never totally be sure who is reptilian and who's not. It's not like our checklist, right?
That's right.
The whole point of reptilians is that they disguise themselves among regular humans and are hard to spot. They're supposed to have superhuman strength, so trying to fight them head-on would be a bad idea. Since they are artificial beings, attempting to overthrow them with weapons also won't work. But not all reptilians have bad intentions either, so don't jump to conclusions. Some reptilians are part human and thus can become self-aware. It's not always a simple game of good and evil. So, they say, you know, if they give you the creepy vibe, then just steer clear.
Steer clear of them.
Right.
Okay.
Reptilian or not, there's no reason to be around someone that may have ill intentions.
Now, I have to tell you, having been around this planet...
Are you a reptilian?
I am.
Oh, I knew it.
No. I don't think so. You and I are smooth-skinned white boys. And
right.
So we don't look much like reptilians, but
okay.
I suppose we could be faking it. And, this story about the reptiles has been around, gosh, as long as I can remember. You know, I mean, even back in the 60s, I mean, I heard these stories. Well, yeah, you know, and I think that's...
Hey, that dude's a reptilian, man!
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we took a lot of drugs back then, too, so...
Yeah, you did. You took them all.
We took them all. We took them all.
Right.
But it was a good time. And the music was great, but you know, this story has been around for a very, very long time, and it may have been around, you know, even before the 60s, but that was the first time I remember hearing about it.
Right.
And the story has grown and gotten more detailed over the years, but you know, the basis of the story is the same, that these reptiles came here to take over the world and control people and control the human race.
There's another theory, and maybe this is a common one, and I'm just kind of clueless, that it's the reptilians that created the Greys, cloned them, hatch them, however they're manufactured, like the alien hunter Daryl Sims tells us, because they can't come here, so they send the Greys here to do it. I don't quite understand how it all works, like why they wouldn't be able to come here. I mean, it kind of conflicts with this theory here that the reptilians are here on Earth and they're in disguise. The theory is the reptilians and the praying mantis ones are the ones that hatch, clone, created, whatever, the gray aliens that keep abducting us to study us because they can't. Does that make sense?
So why can't the reptilians study us?
I don't know that much of it, and I think nobody knows why they can't, according to this theory, but just they can't, so they send the gray aliens here to do it.
They're kind of like the surgeons of the reptile world.
Huh? Something. I don't know. It's weird.
Interesting. That's an interesting theory. You know, I'm going to have to think
about it. It's not my theory. I just...
No, but it's an interesting theory.
Right. I don't know. Reptilians. Hey, I'm not writing it off.
So what about Bigfoot, then?
What about it?
Well, I mean, they control Bigfoot, too.
I don't know. Some are saying Bigfoots are man-made now.
You know.
Like something that we made in the lab and got loose.
Yeah. Well, that's a possibility, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. You were laughing just a minute ago. You were pointing at me.
Actually, I'm reading a book right now on that exact same thing.
What?
Where this woman worked for a military research lab and developed a retrovirus that she hoped would help her child who had a rare disease.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out that, of course, the military then tried to weaponize it and created
of course.
This this is a Dean Koontz novel, so it's kind of way out there, but it created this whole group of monkeys and different animals that some of them misbehave and some of them are vicious and some of them are helpful. But it spreads. It spreads to humans and it's spreading throughout the world, this virus.
Hmm.
And these people in the book are trying to fight these monkeys that are, I guess you could call them genetically engineered, although it was done with these retroviruses. And a retrovirus is basically a virus that's intended to deliver a packet of genes to a living organism. So they package it in a virus, they inject the virus into the being, and the virus then releases these packets of DNA or other viruses that can change a person's behavior or can change their DNA in a way that alters their you know, physical and mental functioning.
One of the reasons why I don't really buy the Sasquatch was genetically engineered and got out of the lab.
Why?
Due to the logs of the earlier Nordics, like yeah. Leif Erikson talks about the hairy, smelly giants and whatnot.
Yeah.
And plus all the native lore. I mean, they've been around longer than we've been genetically engineering things.
Right.
Right? So.
And we know that, I mean, back, you know, before man began to evolve into what we are today, humans, you know, that we were big, hairy creatures.
You still you
know?
Are.
Well, I know, but nobody notices because I wear clothes, so.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. Hope you enjoyed our topics today. If you have any suggestions or suggestions for guests, recommendations, stories you want to share, if you want to yell at Bill for his new age hooey, strangeharbor.net. You going to do your thing?
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.